Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Plenty of you guys are reacting to the Russell Westbrook trade with the Rockets and OKC last night, as well as dropping us a ton of voicemails and text messages over the past couple of days. So we appreciate everybody that's been hitting us up. You can do so at 331-979-1369. Matt, happy Friday to you. Welcome back. We have to probably start with the biggest news in the NBA over the last 24, 48 hours. And that's Russell Westbrook going to the Houston Rockets and Chris Paul going to Oklahoma City. But before we do that, how you doing on this Friday?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to the weekend. Doing a lobster boil on the roof with the roommates tonight, so that should be pretty fun. Beautiful forecast for the first night of another Chicago summer weekend. Looking forward to that. But, I mean, that can't beat the trade that went down yesterday. I mean, like, before we actually break down and analyze what this trade means for both teams and the players involved, can we just take a second to revel in how fucking awesome the NBA offseason is? No other league is like this. No other league provides this kind of entertainment when there are not actually teams playing. Summer league is an afterthought because it's now the middle of July and we're still getting crazy Woj bombs. Obviously, the decision, the ripple effect from Kawhi and then Paul George going to the Clippers meant that it was likely that the Thunder would finally look to trade Russ and tear it all down and start over. So we kind of thought that something like this could be coming. It was just a matter of which teams would be involved and what happened. But, I mean, the drama involved with this and the players involved with this, it's just so awesome. God, I love the NBA.
This is the best NBA offseason ever, right?
I think it's got
to
be.
Pretty easy to declare that.
Yeah.
Even better than 2010, correct?
Yeah. Like, Tom Haberstroh for NBC Sports just did something earlier today. You know, he does that segment called, like, the big number or whatever. And it was, this most recent one was about the number of players that switch teams, the number of the top 30 free agents in this summer's free agent class that switch teams as opposed to staying, and the number of players that either through free agency or being traded switch teams already this summer. It's like a huge percentage of the league, basically just different players going all over the place. And there have been big summers before, but I don't know if we've had one that's topped this.
Totally agree with you. It's crazy. I mean, we talked about 40% of the league being free agents, and this is awesome. Teams are being revitalized. Teams that haven't been in the playoffs before now are adding stars. Stars are moving all over the place. And instead of big threes being literally three biggest guys on your team, three all-stars, it seems like it's a lot of duos now, which is fantastic for the NBA's parity. And I think this is what the NBA needed, seeing that LeBron went to LA and all of these guys were teaming up in Golden State. And, you know, it was cool for those fan bases. It's cool for us to kind of watch, but I feel like the average NBA fan wasn't going to tune in all the time. They were kind of defeated in some sense because they're like, oh, Golden State's going to win. I mean, they've got four all-stars, four of the top 10 best players. Now it seems like there's a little bit more parity. There's a little bit more guessing as to who could be at the top of the West and the East next season and in the next couple of seasons. So I would definitely stamp this as probably the best NBA offseason of all time.
The point you make about parity, to me, that's why it's so exciting. You know, I was talking about this the excitement around this upcoming NBA season with some of my buddies at NBC yesterday. And, there's some cautious optimism about the Bulls, specifically. But just as an NBA fan in general, you look at all these duos and in both conferences, they're like title odds, of course, shifted again. Last night after that trade went down and boosted the Rockets a little bit, and we could talk about whether or not you actually think that the Rockets get better with this trade. But, you know, Kawhi and Paul George, LeBron and AD, even some of like the second tier teams like that made really strong moves, teams like the Utah Jazz that are getting a lot of credibility for what they did this offseason, the moves they made, Pacers being a resurgent team in the East, even without Kevin Durant, the Brooklyn Nets taking a step forward with Kyrie, adding DeAndre Jordan to the role players they have over there. Everywhere you look, there are interesting duos and quality depth lineups all over the league. And I think for the first time in a while, we are coming into this season saying there is no clear-cut favorite to win the title. The defending champs, the Raptors, are certainly not there. They're not the favorite since Kawhi left. A lot of people would say that it's the Lakers just because of LeBron and Anthony Davis. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. You know, LeBron's coming off a season where he had probably the most significant injury of his career. He's another year older. Anthony Davis is never a reliably healthy 82-game kind of guy. Will the role players they sign around them mesh? Will it be better this time around? You know, they brought Rondo back. They brought in Boogie Cousins. It's going to be crazy. But I don't think you can call them the clear-cut favorites far and away, as opposed to the past 5 years when it's like, okay, it's the Warriors and then it's everybody else. There's so much parity coming into this season, and it's great for the league.
It all bars on health, I think. I think that's the most important thing for a lot of these guys. Like you were talking about with the Lakers, I think people are pointing to the Lakers being maybe the favorites, but I mean, Anthony Davis or LeBron James go down for any significant amount of time next season, that team's terrible. That team's the Pelicans of the last 3 years, right? Like, the role players there aren't that great, and any of those guys go down, I think that's why I think just taking a look at all the teams across the NBA, I wouldn't peg myself as a single team being an NBA champion favorite, like an over-the-top favorite, at least this year. So I love it. I love the fact that we have legitimately 10 or 12 teams that could be contending and are going to be fun night in and night out to watch just because they have stars. Now you probably add another 8 to 10 of those teams that are just going to be legitimately fun to watch in the NBA on a nightly basis. The way that the Kings were fun last year, I feel like the Bulls are going to be in that conversation. It's going to be like the Bulls and the Hawks. Orlando is going to be fun to watch. Detroit will be fun to watch again too. These teams that are kind of in the middle, still kind of rebuilding, have a lot of young core, those are going to be the teams that are going to be fun night in and night out to watch. So you probably have, what, two-thirds, if not more, three-quarters of the league that you could watch on a nightly basis and not be upset or not tune out after the first quarter. So I think that's the most exciting thing for the NBA, and it's definitely taken over anything the MLB's done over the last couple of months, and it takes over really the NFL too, right?
Yeah, and there haven't really been super massive storylines going on in this baseball season so far. You know, we just hit the halfway point, had the All-Star game and the All-Star festivities this past weekend, which I'm pretty sure nobody cared about. And it's the NBA offseason, and NBA things are trending way harder and making bigger headlines, just kind of like NBA free agents, or not NBA free agency, NBA trade deadline stuff was like a bigger deal than the Super Bowl back in February. So it's awesome for the league. And, you know, you talk about some of these exciting teams in both conferences and being excited to watch across the board. You know, we'll see how many NBA or how many nationally televised games the Bulls get this year. I'm thinking it might be a handful more than last year, but not a lot more. You know, I think last year was only like two or three, because there's still a lot more interesting teams going on in the East. But to me, it's just like, all right, well, I'm definitely not getting any sleep this upcoming season. On those nights when they do, you know, nationally televised doubleheaders, and that second West Coast game tips off at like 9:30 Central time, those are all going to be can't miss games. You know, like Blazers Jazz, Clippers Lakers. Like, there's just going to be so many awesome nationally televised games. We got to watch them all. We just have to agree that we're never sleeping again.
The Bulls should get at least a few more nationally televised games. I mean, that would be an upgrade for their what? They had two last year, one against the Bucks early on in the season, and then they had the one against, although I think they had, yeah, they had three, though.
Sixers.
They technically counted the one that was on NBA TV against the Lakers in January as a nationally televised game, but they should get more than three, especially because more teams in the East now have a little bit more competitiveness to them. They've got a couple stars that are there across the board, so they should get a few more games. So if they double themselves and get six games, I think I'll be happy.
I was going to say, I'm pretty confident it'll still be fewer than 10.
Yes, definitely.
Like, if the Bulls had gotten Zion, between the Bulls being a big market team and that name, they would have all of a sudden next season probably had like somewhere around 15 or 20 nationally televised games.
The only way it changes is they get more than 10.
Doesn't quite bring that much cachet.
Yeah, that's for sure. The only way they get more than 10 is that they get off to a hot start in October and November, and all of a sudden you see this Bulls team and it's like they're 15-4 or something like that, or 15-6, and the NBA's got to flex their schedule a little bit. But you're right. Ooh. Under 10.
I don't know. I don't know what world you're living in, Jordan.
But it's on the
you're
table. It's the offseason. It's on the table at least. Not very likely, but
hey, everybody's 0-0 right now, right?
Yeah, right. But let's talk a little bit about this Russell Westbrook trade, since we're on the topic of parity in the NBA. Kind of crazy. I did not expect this to go down, but I'm pretty sure Russell Westbrook and James Harden met over the last week or so to talk about. I don't know if they were playing in a local tournament or something, like how these guys play in like the Drew League and all these other leagues. I don't know if that was going on, because I saw a clip of him and James Harden playing in something. Maybe that was a few years ago. But somebody had tweeted out, and it's like, look, James Harden and Russell Westbrook don't have a problem playing together. And that was a couple days ago. And then all of a sudden this trade goes through. But I think this is a good trade for both the Rockets and for Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City, again, man, we'll get to them in a second. But how do you feel about the Rockets adding Russell Westbrook, and do you think this changes the projection of what the Rockets could potentially do with their core?
First of all, what it tells me is that, you know, some of it has to do with, you know, the Thunder side and Paul George leaving and the Thunder deciding to trade Russ and start over. But from the Rockets' perspective, like, the whole notion that Daryl Morey and everybody and CP3 himself were trying to shoot down these rumors that there were some you know, heads butting and some chemistry issues and some not so nice things going on between CP3 and Harden, and they had their moments where they did not get along very well on the court and off. That and then they were like, well, that's news to me. Daryl Morey was like, everything's fine. I don't know where these reports are coming from. Usually, as they say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So to me, this move was not only a move to, you know, take a big swing in a year when, you know, we were just talking about the parity, the Warriors, everybody's expecting, you know, they'll probably still be a playoff team, but they're not the de facto favorites that are standing in your way anymore. Let's swing big. Let's reunite Russ and, you know, and the beard and see if we can make this happen. But I think it was just as much about getting off of CP3's contract, which, yeah, like, Westbrook's is also, like, basically equally gigantic. You know, there's one fewer year in the other one. But it was, I think, also about splitting up Harden and CP3, who were just, they had enough of playing together. Does this move the needle for the Rockets? Do I think it's a good move for the Rockets? Time will tell, but I don't see how Westbrook fits in well with his usage percentages and Harden's. These are not the same guys who played together when they were significantly younger in OKC. Harden's got an MVP under his belt. Harden is the primary ball handler on that team, and Westbrook has never been a very efficient player playing off the ball. So I have my doubts about if this actually is going to pay off for Houston.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, at least that they can turn the page and try something a little bit different, like you were talking about with Chris Paul and James Harden's relationship. This was probably the only move that Houston could make that still keeps them at about the same level that they were at with Chris Paul. Any other move that they would have made to just dump Chris Paul would have definitely put the Houston Rockets in a weird situation because you're paying a ton of money to James Harden and you're also paying a decent amount of money to Clint Capella. And then you're probably going to have to take a bunch of contracts back that you don't want in order to dump CP3. So this was really the only deal that I felt like makes both teams at least in a decent situation. Same thing with OKC. They're going to get a star back. They're going to get Chris Paul back. And even if he is only 60-65%, like you said, the Paul George trade initiated all of that. They'll still be competitive and they're still going to be fun. We'll talk about their lineup in a minute. But yeah, this is going to be weird with Houston and not. I'm rooting for it to work. I want Houston, I want James Harden, and I want Russell Westbrook to work together. And I think that would be a whole hell of a lot of fun to see that reunion end up. Because Russell Westbrook, everybody talked about how nobody wanted to play with him and how he wasn't a very good teammate on the floor in terms of being able to share and be able to play with other stars. So I hope that that does work out for him and James Harden. It's definitely interesting, though. But what do you think about OKC's haul? Let me just read you real quick. The first round picks Oklahoma City has now after that deal was done. 2022 own.
It's like eight.
Yes. And they all have weird protections on them. 2022 own is protected 1 through 20. 2020 Denver pick is protected 1 through 10. 2021 own, they have the right to swap with Houston 5 through 30. 2021 Miami, they have the right to swap with Houston 5 through 30. 2022, they have their own pick 1 through 14. 2022, they have the Clippers pick unprotected. 23, they have their own pick and the right to swap with the Clippers. 23, they have Miami's pick protected 1 through 14. 24, they have their own pick. They have the Clippers pick in 24, unprotected. They have Houston's pick protected 1 through 4. 2025, they have their own pick, and they have the right to swap with the Clippers and Houston at 21 through 30. 26, they have their own pick. 26, they have the Clippers pick, and they have Houston's pick 1 through 4 protected. Holy crap, Matt. They have a ton of first-round picks, and they also have a decent amount of talent still on their team.
Yeah. They do. I mean, it's going to be tough to make the playoffs in the West, and they might not quite get there, but they're certainly not going to be a team of scrubs. And in the meantime, you know, what Sam Presti's been able to do facing the reality that the first generation of OKC basketball, you know, basically after they moved the team over from Seattle, trading Westbrook is closing that chapter and starting a brand new one. And it's crazy to think. I think it was Royce Young who had a video on Twitter this morning talking about how, you know, the Thunder were the dynasty that never was. And it's crazy that with all of that talent, you know, they made it to the finals once when it was all three of them and they were still very young and they lost to the Heat. And that was 2012. And that even after, you know, Harden departed, they had Durant and Westbrook together for all those years and never were able to win. And then tried to rework things with bringing in Paul George to play with Westbrook, and that didn't work. And, like, it's crazy to think that that group of talent and all those individual talents never actually got it done. It just tells you how good some of the other teams in the league have been in that same span of time, LeBron's teams and the Warriors primarily. But that list of draft picks that you just rattled off is insane. Like, that is a gigantic quantity of draft capital that sets the Thunder up for, you know, brighter days ahead, even if they kind of stumble and take a couple of seasons to figure out what happens next. You mentioned some of them are swaps, some of them are protected. A lot of people thinking especially the ones in the, you know, the Paul George trade, getting all those picks from the Clippers, that those might not be as valuable because now everybody's anticipating the Clippers to be, like, you know, a top two seed in the East, in the West, perhaps, over the next several years, assuming that Kawhi and Paul George stick around. So, but the thing is that, like, those Clippers picks go all the way into, like, the mid to late 2020s. So maybe that Clippers run is short-lived, and maybe, yeah, they have protections on them, but maybe some of those Clippers picks down the road, I mean, you know, we're talking 5, 6, 7 years down the road, end up being more valuable than people think they are now, just because people assume, oh, they got a bunch of picks from the Clippers. The Clippers are going to be good, therefore the picks won't be good. But those picks go out a long way. I think based on the situation they were in, the Thunder did pretty darn well with moving George and Westbrook.
Yeah, and who knows what happens 2 years from now when Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can potentially opt out of their third year of their contract with the Clippers, and that could start relatively early. With the Thunder, at least...
Dude, at least one of them's coming here to play with Markkanen, yeah. Right? Like that's
at least they'll be in line, and they'll be fun to watch for OKC. It's not like that they're going to be all of a sudden a dumpster fire team like the Knicks and just have a bunch of young guys out there that aren't going to make much of an impact. You still have Chris Paul. You still have Steven Adams. You have Danilo Gallinari. You have Dennis Schroeder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Terrence Ferguson, Patrick Patterson, and Nerlens Noel is your core, and Hamidou Diallo, who's very, very young. You have all of these dudes that have decent potential and will be fun to watch while you're stashing all of those first-round draft picks. 8 in total, I think, or 9 in total plus their own, which is absolutely absurd. I mean, this puts them in a situation where they can make moves, too, down the line. Say a free one of these big star free agents says, you know what, I'm going to leave, but I don't want to screw over my old team. Similarly, the way we saw Chris Paul do this, there was another sign-and-trade just recently that had happened, but... That can set up OKC to trade away some of these draft picks if they want to acquire a star and they feel like their team is on the cusp of doing that. You have a ton of draft picks for trade capital, too, if you don't want to just try to build this on your own like they did before. So they're going to be fun to watch.
Well, and they could also use some of that draft capital to move CP3.
That's true. It's true.
What we heard from Woj earlier this morning is that the plan is for the Thunder. The plan for the Thunder is that CP3, and this is a quote from Woj, doesn't play a game in a Thunder uniform, end quote, looking to move him soon. So it sounds like they basically, like they were trying to work a third team into the deal, Houston was, to be the team that ended up being where Chris Paul landed. But now basically that didn't happen, so the Thunder have to figure it out themselves. But it sounds like Presti is talking with CP3 and his agent to figure out where exactly the next stop is. Woj also tweeted last night, Miami remains a possibility. So that would be interesting. Jimmy Butler and CP3 teaming up. A banana boat playing with a banana boat wannabe. And two gigantic egos. That could be really fun. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, I think it's in the Thunder's best interest to get off of Paul's contract because they, you know, I think they still, like you said, have some other talent. And... let's be real. Nobody likes Chris Paul. Nobody wants Chris Paul. That contract is gross, and he like gets in fights with every team he ever plays for. So
Miami could get their first round pick.
If I'm the Thunder, I'm looking to trade CP3 like today.
Yeah, and if Miami is in play, they could get their first round picks back too in a possible Chris Paul trade to the Heat. Like the Heat don't have any first round picks.
Well, and they were the other team that were being talked about as the other likely suitor for Westbrook. When the Thunder were like, all right, well, we got to trade Westbrook now. What teams out there could make this happen and have a star and want to add another star to the star they have? And Miami was the team that was getting the most traction. And basically what we heard was that the market for Westbrook was actually pretty small, pretty narrow. And it became essentially Houston being able to offer more than what Miami was offering. So maybe Miami is now the team that says, well, we wanted Russ, but maybe, you know, teaming CP3 up with Jimmy is a decent backup plan. I think they'd be nuts, but hey, entertainment for us, right?
Absolutely. Real quick, and then we'll get on to some Bulls stuff before we get out of here for the weekend. If OKC came to the Bulls and said, we'll give you Chris Paul and we'll also give you 2 or 3 first round picks, would you do that just to take on his money?
And it's mostly... It's mostly a biased thing. I do not want Chris Paul on this team. I do not want Chris Paul on my team. I hate him. Have always hated him. He's bad. He's just bad news everywhere he goes. And he's aging, and the contract is terrible. But even not thinking about his age, and it doesn't fit with the rebuild and the contract and all that, I hate CP3. Always have. Don't want him anywhere near this team.
Put your opinion aside for a second and just think objectively. Would the Bulls entertain an offer like that? if it was two or three first round picks that you're getting back, mostly unprotected too, like decent first round picks. Would they entertain the idea? Because he has a player option in 2021-22. That's when he's off. So that's the latest that you would have him on your team is for three seasons, including this one coming up. Does it really affect the timeline too much, especially if a lot of those guys opt back in, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George in the summer of 2021? Really, Giannis is the only guy that's the massive superstar that's going to be available then. Would you entertain this idea?
If I'm the Bulls, not me. I mean, based on what we have heard from Paxson, even recently when he was asked about a hypothetical Westbrook trade on 670, like yesterday morning, he said no, and the reasons were age and contract, and that was for Westbrook. So given that CP3 is on an equally gigantic contract and is even older than Westbrook, I would assume that their answer would be nah, no thanks, we're not interested in CP3 either, for the very same reasons that they were never interested in Westbrook.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair. Real quick before we get off of Russell Westbrook, a lot of discussion, Matt, from our episode on Wednesday. Good back and forth, too. I liked it because it gave us both an opportunity to take different stances. And there's a lot of fans who were split out there about either acquiring Westbrook or not acquiring Westbrook. And that's partly why I love this Bulls fan base, is because everybody's so passionate about this. And you can extend a conversation over a handful of weeks. And so it was cool to hear some of the reaction from you guys. Appreciate everybody that listened to our episode on Wednesday. And look, me and Matt don't. It's not like me and Matt are going after each other. We're just having a heated debate. That's all it was. And it was fun. That's part of this is if you have an opinion, I want you to come at me, and I want you to come at me strong, too. And that's anybody out there, too. If you've got an opinion, drop it to us at 331-979-1369. And I want to clear something up, too. There's a difference between me wanting the Bulls to trade for Westbrook and the likelihood that the Bulls would trade for Westbrook. Those are two completely different conversations, and I feel like some people that were reacting to us were getting that a little bit blurred. So I didn't think that the Bulls were going to trade for Westbrook. I just felt like if they were had the opportunity
no,
to do
you
that.
Just thought that there was some merits to the
exactly,
idea.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, it didn't happen, and John Paxson even talked about it, which I thought was kind of funny. It's like, there had been no rumors about the Bulls being involved here. Maybe they did pick up the phone and call initially, but then for him to get asked too on 670 The Score the other day, I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, and you know, I think he was fairly honest in that interview. And you know, there were pretty in line things with what we have heard from him recently. It's like they're staying the course, and you know, that's what I believe them to be doing. And for the love of God, if we can't get rid of these people, I want them to at least see their plan through. And that's kind of the basis of my side of the argument from our Westbrook conversation on Wednesday was like, it's just like it's once again taking a completely out of nowhere left turn when you finally started to build a path forward for yourself, which to me is why it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And look, and it may not be right, and this is kind of what you were saying, maybe that Markkanen and or Levine don't develop into stars, and if you can go trade for one right now who is already a star in his prime, then why the hell not? And I certainly see that side of the argument. And I think a lot of Bulls fans, you know, you said you certainly saw more who were anti-Russ than pro-Russ, but I think a lot of Bulls fans who always say, go get a star, why can't we get a star, we need a star, they thought that, you know, trading for Westbrook was a good idea because of that very thing. We want a star player on our team. And getting one in a trade is a surefire thing, and hoping that one of the young guys on the roster turns into a star in the next couple of years is not. And I totally see that, but to me, it was always about this team actually following through on a plan and having a plan. You can't say it's not a plan to hope that Lowry and Markkanen develop into stars. The plan is for them to develop into stars. That's a plan. I don't know if it'll work. They don't know if it'll work. And if it doesn't work, what we've heard is that this is it. This is the last chance. And Paxson and Gar are going to be gone. So honestly, to me, it's like it's a win-win. Either the plan works and they continue to follow through with the plan, good for them, they finally actually follow through with a plan that is logical and makes sense, or it doesn't, and Bulls fans everywhere finally get their wish, and there is a turnover in management. So to me, that's why, like, dude, if they went and got Russ, Maybe that buys Paxton and Foreman more time. Maybe that buys them another.
Yeah, okay. not just him, but Jim Boylan too.
Exactly. You know, it's like, all right, we got this young core and we got this coach that seems a little weird, a little kooky, and we're going to roll with it. And Paxton is doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. This is the plan. This is the plan. This is the plan. Great. Let's see if it works. If it doesn't, you're out.
I agree with that. And like sticking to a plan and not shifting is nice. And they did a little bit of that. They shifted their plan and their focus from what they initially said that they were going to do when they traded Jimmy. And obviously things can change a little bit within your plan, but I don't think going out and trading for Otto Porter was in the plans at all in February, right? Like, trading for a guy with that massive of a salary, I get that he's still young, and that's part of their plan, too, is to build a young core. But that was certainly an alteration of the plan, or at least like a detour of what they initially set out to say that they wanted to do and build this right through the draft and be savvy with their cap. But obviously things do change a little bit.
I think it was a wise, calculated detour. Like, you don't want to give them too much credit because, like, Otto fell into their lap after the wall injury. And before that, they were about to trade for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Let's never forget that.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
We were high on.
But... They deviated from the plan in trading for Otto because, well, let's see, Bobby Portis, thank God, turned down an offer a year ago and then was battling injuries and not having a very good season and was coming up on negotiations as a restricted free agent, and they didn't want anything to do with that. And the Jabari plan exploded in their faces like we all knew it would, and they had to get rid of that. So... In making the Otto trade, they kind of solved a couple of problems simultaneously.
That's true. Yeah, because they...
You're right that it wasn't in line with the plan, which was like, hey, we'll you know, play out Bobby's last year of his rookie deal and then see what happens in the summer, and hopefully we can negotiate. Oh, and by the way, we're giving Jabari $20 million. It's going to be great. We're going to play him at the three. That was a terrible part of the plan, and they fixed it. So thank God for that.
I want to know what they were thinking last summer. Like, what were you doing last summer? Because this summer is completely 180 degrees different than it was last summer. It's like, why would you throw, why would you throw $20 million at Jabari Parker?
Look at everybody in the league. They don't pay players to play defense.
And that was basically your only offseason move besides re-signing Zach LaVine. And then they turn around this summer and have a decent offseason. So it makes absolutely no sense. And then the last thing, just real quick, I totally get the conversation that was happening is like, why wouldn't we have just kept Jimmy if we were really going to trade for Russ? I get that. And I'm exactly the same thing I was saying over the last 2 years. Totally understand that. It's like, don't trade for somebody and it limit your ceiling. I get that. But this team is different than it was with Jimmy back in the summer of 2017. You have Markkanen, you have Carter, you have Kobe White, you have some young assets that you feel pretty good about. You have Otto Porter Jr. So the team that they would have been building around with Russ is different than the team that they would have had they kept Jimmy around and signed him to a full contract in 2017.
If you keep Jimmy, you don't have Markkanen. You don't have Wendell because you don't have number seven picks in back-to-back, and you don't have Kobe because you don't have seven picks in back-to-back-to-back years. You're probably a seventh or an eighth seed, and you're picking in the teens.
So that's why I was like, yeah, it's similar in some sense, but this team has more potential if you did that with Russ. But yeah, Russ... Like,
I think they blew their shot at building around Jimmy. And look, I never thought that Jimmy was that good and good enough to be the best player on a team that was actually... going towards the top of the East. Never bought into that. If they had been smarter with the things that they did around him, especially after, you know, saying goodbye to an aging, kind of broken at the time, Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose, moving on from that, instead of the stupidity of Wade and Rondo, they actually signed complimentary pieces, shooters who could space the floor around Jimmy as your dominant ball-handling offensive player, then we could have seen maybe... that work a little bit better. And maybe with the right complementary pieces, Jimmy and the Bulls could have gotten better than being an eighth seed. But to me, the Wade and Rondo signings were the writing on the wall for this was the worst possible move we could have made. And now we know that we have to trade Jimmy because this isn't working. And we wasted the small window we had to actually make correct signings to make the team around him better.
Right. It would have been weird. It'd been kind of cool to see if they could have pulled off a deal for Kyrie Irving. That was kind of been talked about before Jimmy was traded is those two having a conversation about whether or not the Bulls could pull something off when he was still in Cleveland instead of going to Boston. But that's all what ifs. But that would have been cool to see if they maybe could have pulled something off like that. I know that there's reports that they made at least a call to Cleveland and a deal wasn't going to be able to get done just because of the money and the picks that Cleveland would have wanted back. And Boston fleeced them with the Isaiah Thomas trade, like him coming out off an all-star year. They thought they were going to get a better player back and all the injuries that had happened there. But yeah, I good for Russ. He's going to Houston, pairing up with James Harden. Bulls are going to continue on their path. And with that, Matt, this is interesting. We heard from Jim Boylan again, who's been down at Summer League and trying to do all these team bonding experiences and all that. It just brought me back to last Summer League when Fred Hoiberg had a bunch of those guys around and they went to dinner together and that awkward picture that they took. I don't know what restaurant they were at, but it was pretty funny. It was like Cristiano Felicio and Bobby Portis and Antonio Blakeney and Denzel Valentine and Fred Hoiberg and somebody else too. It's just a very, very bizarre picture. But with Jim Boylan, he did mention his starting five is already set. Can I just ask how your starting five is already set in July when you don't have any stars? Like, you don't have guys that are automatically going to be placed in your starting five. So you see Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Otto Porter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. are his starting five, and that is set in stone right
now.
We
have Dunn, LaVine, Porter, Markkanen, and Carter. We kind of have our first five set. And so what we wanted to do is add quality draft picks, which we did, two great kids and I think going to be real good pros. But then we wanted to build depth behind those first five guys, and that's what we've done. Veteran depth. You know, you've probably heard me talk about, you know, having a good soul, having a good spirit. That's important to us, and playing for each other. And we got Thaddeus Young, and we got Thomas Satoransky. And
what did you think about that, and are you buying into the fact that Jim Boylan said he already has a starter set, or do you think things can change?
It just made me laugh because it is, when you think about it, the exact opposite of what John Paxson has been talking about, whether it's adding guys in free agency or hoping to see Kobe White push some of the other guys. It's like competition, right? John Paxson keeps talking about how he needs competition. They want the team to be competitive, but they want some of that competition to come from within. And he wants a competitive training camp, and he wants people competing for spots and competing for minutes, and he thinks that that's healthy. And so before training camp starts, we have our starting five? Like, no, of course not. And to me, like, if there is a starting five in place, it is exactly what he said, except you're swapping in Satoransky and swapping out Chris Dunn. And I think the other factor here is that, like, look, Jim Boylan's a nice guy. You know, I got a chance to chat with him for a good long while at a Bulls charity event a couple months back when the season was winding down. He's a little out there with the way that he talks about basketball and his team and the way he operates. But there is no denying that he's a genuinely nice human being. And I think maybe he was just trying to say something nice and do something nice for Chris Dunn, who was just getting shot at from all sides right now. Like, people are talking about how he doesn't have any trade value. People are talking about how he's been a bust. He can't stay healthy. He can't be on the court. A rookie's going to take his job. Some dude who half the fan base hasn't even heard of is going to take his job. Like, it's not fun to be Chris Dunn right now. And we've heard that he wants out and the Bulls want him out. So maybe Boylan was just trying to, like, cut a guy a break and say that. And also maybe backtrack what Jim Boylan's bosses have done to themselves recently, which is shoot themselves in the foot and kill his trade value by continuously saying negative things about Chris Dunn. Maybe they're trying to build up his trade value a little bit because they themselves killed it. Because let's remember, they made some nice moves, but these people are not always people who make wise choices.
There's an interesting theory to this, and I think you just brought it up, is the fact that Jim Boylan, I think, is trying to boost either the confidence level on Chris Dunn or just the value overall when people are talking about him. Look, those guys hear everything that the fan base is saying. I know that John Paxson says he's not on Twitter. Of course not, but
I don't have Twitter. I don't do anything like that. And
there are people around him that are on Twitter that are notifying him what people are saying about this team and how things are operated. The players are on Twitter. Jim Boylan is on Twitter, but I don't think he's tweeted since like 2013, since he was still at Utah. But there are a lot of factors to this. I think one is you're definitely right about Chris Dunn boosting his confidence level. Two, do you think it is because Chris Dunn, there's literally no trade value out there for him, that the Bulls would go into training camp and say, hey, you're the guy, you're the vet guy that's here as far as the point guards go. It's your job to lose. So if you go into training camp and you lose the job to a rookie and to a guy that's coming in via trade this offseason, that's on you. That's not on us. We're giving you every opportunity to win that starting job. You have it right now. Also, too, I think it could be that they realize that there's no trade value for him. They want to play out the first couple months of the season, see if he does play well, and maybe that can set up for a deal in the first couple of months of the NBA season or leading up to the trade deadline. What do you think about that?
I mean, I see the logic to why they would do that, but I don't like it. Because I don't know how much you could boost Chris Dunn's trade value by playing him if, I mean, because it would make no sense to try to boost his trade value by playing him as a starter next to LaVine in the backcourt, because we have already figured out that LaVine is better and that doesn't work and that there's no chemistry there. So starting him doesn't make him look any better. Maybe you have Chris Dunn as your primary backup and try to show that he can excel as a backup point guard in this league, which would give him actual trade value as opposed to zero trade value. But then why did you re-sign Archie and why did you draft Kobe White? Like, to me, it doesn't make any sense. We did hear Paxson say on 670 just the other day that Kobe White's going to have to compete and going to have to earn his minutes. And they're not just going to hand minutes to a rookie who's still very raw. And as you've seen in these summer league games, definitely very raw and is going to need some coaching and some development. So I understand that. But to me, like, you know, why'd you sign Satoransky? Why'd you bring Archie back? Why'd you draft Kobe White? Everything points to Dunn being the odd man out. And I'm sorry, if at this point you have done this to yourself and killed his trade value, take what you can get, even if it's next to nothing, and move on. But if that's the thing that keeps him around and keeps us from seeing Kobe White try to, you know, get thrown in the deep end as a backup guard on this team as a rookie and see Satoransky be the low usage, high efficiency guard that is needed to complement players like LaVine and Markkanen and Otto. If Chris Dunn fucks any and all of that up, I'm going to be real pissed about it.
I don't think you have to worry too much about that. I feel like for Chris Dunn, more so than anything, it's going to be about boosting that trade value. And whether that is starting him in the first couple of months, like, granted, this team is going to try to compete and be fun next year, correct? Like, they're going to try to win games.
Why'd you pay Satoransky $10 million then?
I get to be a backup, like, but that's kind of the price tag that's going for backups now. Like, that's the same thing we were talking about big men, right? Like, look at what Thaddeus Young's getting paid to come off the bench. And really, I don't think that there's that big of a, like, to NBA players, it might be a big deal. But in terms of playing time, Satoransky could be the guy that you close with, right? And I feel like that's more important to that should be more important to a player than it is to just start the beginning of the game, is to be the dude that's in there in the crunch time when you need to close games, right? I don't think Chris Dunn will be in the game when they're trying to close it out, unless you need, like, you want to put a defensive specialist in there. You want to take LaVine out and you want to put Satoransky and Dunn at the one and the two.
Then why start him?
So that's, to me, why I think that they did that.
Satoransky, when he came in and became the starter for Washington over like 55 games, was averaging 32, 33 minutes per game. Now, I'm pretty sure the Bulls are expecting him to do similarly his first year here. That's why they brought him here. If they actually made the smart signing that we believe, those of us, believe to be the smart signing of getting a low-usage, high-efficiency, quote-unquote point guard to run with that first unit and make LaVine and Markkanen the focal points of that offense while minimizing turnovers, that's who Satoransky is, and that's who they pegged, and that's why they brought him in, to start with that unit. That's the most logical explanation. I mean, are you honestly telling me that you think and also think they should and will keep Chris Dunn around and start him?
I don't know for sure at the beginning of the season. I think they're doing this for training camp reasons, to see if this will put a fire underneath Chris Dunn and all of a sudden turn a switch on that hasn't been turned on in over a year, right? I think that's just more so for training camp than anything else. Like, in the back of their minds, they probably realize that Satoransky is going to be their starter somewhere down the line. I think this is more about trying to fix whatever's going on with Chris Dunn, and whether that's boosting his trade value, trying to get his confidence level up, any of that, I don't think that they want to disrespect Chris Dunn. And maybe it goes back to what you were saying is about Jim Boylan, is Jim Boylan realizes that maybe Chris Dunn's been getting a lot of shit and he wants to try and mend that a little bit by boosting his confidence, by saying that he is still part of his starting five. I think it's more setting it up for training camp than it is setting it up for the regular season.
But I mean, in Casey Johnson's most recent mailbag for the Trib, which there was a lot of good stuff in there, and let's be honest, some people in the fan base, you know, don't like when we bring him on. They refer to him as a Garpax apologist, all this stuff. Whether or not you believe that, you have to believe, because it is fact, that guy has more of an inside track to the minds and plans of the people running this team than anybody else on the beat. That dude knows what's up. Cannot 100% deny that. And he said he would be surprised if Chris Dunn is on this team when training camp begins. That's what I believe. Maybe there's a last-ditch effort to try and raise Chris Dunn's trade value because they did this to themselves. And Casey did say in that mailbag that, like, the Bulls don't want to just trade him for nothing, essentially, because they think that he's more valuable than nothing. And he is. But again, you brought in Satoransky. You brought back Archie to be that, you know, that grit, hustle, you know, third guard off the bench, who's also, you know, a very efficient player, you know, solid assist percentage, and keeps the turnovers to a minimum. And you drafted Kobe White. So you add all that up, and why the heck would they still be worried about Chris Dunn's confidence and trying to find a way to keep him around? Because that, to me, makes no sense. They're not going to re-sign him. This is the last year on his rookie deal.
Yeah, I don't think it's – I think you're right in the fact that it's not about keeping him around long-term. I think it's more so about boosting that trade value than anything else. And whether that's a little bit by just saying that he's going to be a starter. And
it's just a laughable, feeble attempt, if that is what it is.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next month and a half leading up to training camp. Been a wild offseason. Wouldn't be surprised if he does get moved. Like any other team, maybe in the middle of August, is trying to figure out what else they're going to do with this team. Most of the free agents are signed by then. Could be an opportunity for the Bulls to make a quick trade right before training camp starts. So definitely don't leave that. I wouldn't leave that out as a possibility. And definitely believe Casey Johnson 100% when he says he would be shocked. He's the guy that's most in tap with what's going on with that Bulls team. So I do believe him too there. So maybe this is just about Jim Boylan trying to have the backs of his players too. And this could be beyond just Chris Dunn, right? Is just showing the other players that are on this team that he's got your back no matter how negative the fan base or anybody else is talking about you. I still got your back and I still believe in you, whether it's 100% true or not. So, yeah.
And, you know, I think that is more so, more likely the answer, and that, you know, this might be a feeble attempt by the Bulls to boost his trade value, but I think anybody with half a brain in front offices around the league would see right through that. I think this is just about Jim Boylan being a nice guy and you know, trying to say that he still believes in Chris Dunn. Because even if the Bulls ship Chris Dunn elsewhere, having a vote of confidence from Jim Boylan, you know, might mean something to Chris Dunn. So it could just be that and only that.
Last thing I got on Jim Boylan real fast is he was on SiriusXM radio when he was down in Vegas. And they had asked him a question along the lines of, like, do you think your style's a little bit different? Do you take offense to basically when people say that you're an old school mentality in terms of coaching? And I thought his response was really pretty good. It wasn't any BS. It wasn't this soul and spirit shit that we hear on a daily basis. It was none of that. It was him talking about, like, I don't understand when the switch flipped from being passionate and caring about playing for your city and caring about the community around you and wanting to play hard every single day.
You seem like a fun guy to me, okay? You seem like you're a fun, cool guy to me. What do you think about this reputation that people talk and they say, you're a tough guy?
Yeah, well,
because I'm sure you know
they haven't played,
right?
For us. Yeah. You know, I get the old school guy, I get the tough guy and all that, you know. My job's to push a guy to a place he can't take himself. That's what I get paid to do. And I'm not afraid of the tough conversations. which I think at sometimes at this level some people are. Nothing grows without some sun, some shade, or some rain. So once in a while you got to bring some shade down to understand where we're going and what we want. And I love what I'm doing, and I'm thankful to be the head coach of the Bulls. And, you know, we got to get this thing right.
Yeah.
We got to get it right. And I've never been called a fun guy, but I'll take that.
Well, do you think that I was trying to loosen you up. Do you think that label's fair? The other one, not the fun guy one.
I don't think it is. I mean, I want to know when old school became asking guys to play hard, care about the city, and care for each other, and play the right way. I want to know when that flipped, and that became old school, and not the way it should be. I'd like to know where that happened, because I think it's wrong. And we have terrific guys. We have fun guys, and we battled through a very difficult season, 300 games missed due to injury. We had trades. we had a lot of tough situations. And so we had a coaching change, which is very difficult. And we fought through, and we played good basketball. And there was a moment in February when we were playing as good as anybody in the league, when Otto was healthy and we were healthy. And
what did you think about that? I thought it was pretty good, and that was like more of an honest answer and a more like inside to what Jim Boylan is thinking more so than anything else. And I actually appreciated it over the soul and the spirit and all of this crap that we heard during the beginning and middle of the season. What did you think about that?
I mean, I thought it was 100% genuine. And it wasn't the stuff that we laugh at, you know, the spirit and the soul and bulls across the chest. And he was kind of asked about his old school mentality. And what I did like in his response was to say that, like, you know, when did that become old school and not just like the way things should be done? Because he talks about, you know, asking more of his players, pushing players to a level that they can't push themselves. That's another phrase he likes to use a lot, and he used in that interview. And saying, you know, sometimes for things to grow, you got to use more than sunshine. You got to use some clouds, and you got to use some rain. You got to use, you know, some of the less pretty stuff. And I'm willing to do that at this level, and I think fewer and fewer people are willing to do that at this level. And, you know, these superstars are, you know, and that's a different conversation for a different day, but have all this power now, and contracts aren't really contracts, and players can force their way to wherever they want to go play, and they're so entitled and all this and all that. And Jim Boylan's still like, well, I'm the coach. The coach is the authority, and I'm pushing you because I believe in you and I care about you. And if I ask a lot of you, you need to know it's because I want you to succeed, and I want you as a member of this team and this team to succeed. So I don't know if you call that old school and all of a sudden why that's old school and not just the way that everybody thinks that this should be done at the highest level. So I give him credit for explaining himself that way, because to me it makes sense. In a lot of ways, it makes sense. Now, will they buy in? You know, it's the question that plays in our intro every episode that was asked of him on, I believe it was Mullion Haw, months ago, soon after that mutiny happened, or the near mutiny happened. Will they buy in? What I've heard is that these players have figured out that Jim Boylan really does care about them. Again, you know, players in the old days with Tibbs put up with his, you know, his harsh demeanor and his rough around the edges and his barking out orders and screaming and condescending and telling them they're never good enough while they were winning. If the Bulls can at least win some with Boylan's strategies, then there's a point to what he's doing. And maybe he's earned a little bit of the trust of the fan base. But we'll wait and see how this team looks through the first quarter of the season. And then we'll go back and revisit some of that Boylan talk.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for them to be as bad as they were to start the season last year. I mean, you'd have to actively try. Or there had to be a lot of injuries that happen at the start of the season for them to be as bad as they were leading up to Fred Hoiberg's firing initially last year. So I think you're right, too. I think this is a little bit of, you know, Jim Boylan came in strong in December. I think this is him now trying to get his players to understand that isn't who I am fully. And the guy that you saw who I am is more the guy in February, March, and April than it was the guy in December or January. So it'll be interesting to see how the players react to this on both sides. Positive side is if the Bulls come into the regular season this year and start off really well and playing under Boylan really, really well. And it's going to be interesting to see if it, on the flip side, is they start off really, really bad and how things are going with Boylan there in the first couple of months. So I thought it was a genuine response, though, and it was good to hear from him at least a little bit. But then shortly after that, we got the crazy talk about him having his starters set already in the middle of July here, when we got 2 months before training camp even starts. So, but I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line this weekend, 331-979-1369. Drop us voicemails or text messages, whatever you got for us. You want to react to any of the trades that went down this week? You want to react to the Russell Westbrook, James Harden stuff? You want to react to Jim Boylan saying he's got a starting five set? Or you want to talk about Summer League, how Coby White and Chandler Hutchison and Daniel Gafford have played over the course of the last four games that they've played in? Anything you got for us, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. We're on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Subscribe to Locked On Bulls anywhere you get your podcasts, that Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts, we are sure to be there. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you get our shows as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
That's kind of cool. That comes in your ear right there. It kind of threw me off for a second, man.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com